Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And I want to welcome former Congressman Scott Klug to help us here at the end of the show. A little bit into it. You're going to open our predictions from last week.
And laugh loudly.
Can you just burn this before you open it? Okay, you hold that and open it later. Former Congressman Scott Klug represented Wisconsin's 2nd District, elected in 1990, 92, 94, 96, and then decided to move on. Now works for Foley and Lardner. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Let's talk national. Thank you for being here. Lessons of the Trump victory?
I think people, well, first of all, I think there's a populist wave going on around the world. So I just actually got back from a U.S. State Department program where I was in Iceland, Finland, and Sweden. And you see it in the Nordic countries. I mean, even there, the number two party in Iceland is called the Pirate Party, which was about as populist as you can get. They want to give Snowden asylum, and they wanted to a big anti-trade wave because of all of Iceland's financial problems in 2009. You can tie that to Brexit. You can look, I think, at the Colombian peace deal. This is a little bit arcane, but Colombia cut a deal with the rebels. It had to be ratified by the citizens. Every poll showed it winning, and it got beat by 1.5 million votes. So people, I think, don't understand this wave. It's a little bit underground, but I think the major news organizations completely missed it because they went in with lots of assumptions that were badly flawed.
Go ahead, J.R., if you have a follow-up.
Well, you worked for John Kasich or were part of his campaign team in Wisconsin. Did you see signs of this back in March and April?
Well, so as part of that, I actually did a lot of surrogate work for John and did television interviews and radio interviews and stuff like that. And anything where there was a call-in fashion, I was stunned by the level of venom and anger that was out there. You know, people were sort of screaming at me at the phone through left and the right. If you watch 60 Minutes last week, if you watch Frank Luntz focus groups, that same sort of burning anger. I heard a great story about a guy walking in a conversation between two Republicans in a country club locker room. And the one guy said, "There's no way in the world I could vote for Trump. Have you heard the things he said?" And the other guy looks at him and said, "Yeah, but he's not one of those guys in Washington." And that's, I think, what came through pretty clearly Tuesday night.
Okay, you're a former broadcast journalist before you were a member of the U.S. House. How did the national media get it so wrong?
Boy, I think based on assumptions, you know, they focused a lot on mechanics, how many people they had in the field, the turnout operation. I think what they never really looked at and listened to was the passion that was out there. There was far more passion on the Trump side than there was on the Hillary side. I think that's sort of part of her personality. I mean, she's a very bright and engaged woman, but I don't think she connects with people. So I don't think they could really read the passion. And I also thought there was a little sense, there was a CBS columnist who said this, sort of beating up his own network the other day, that a lot of the reporting nationally sounded like people in the British colonial empire going out to report from the fields, you know, to talk to the, how could these natives operate this way? And I think there was a lot of strange reporting where I think they went in and every Trump story sounded like the Obama line about people clinging desperately to their religion and their guns. There were these sort of strange people in small towns who didn't understand how America had changed. And I think the people in the small towns said, boy, it may be great in Silicon Valley, but it ain't so hot in Akron. And
flyover land victory.
Yeah,
it
completely.
Was.
Yep.
It was.
So you're former member of Congress. Paul Ryan is now Speaker. From what we're hearing, the Freedom Caucus is backing down from this supposed
sure.
challenge to him. But Paul Ryan is not part of where the populist base is of this party. How will he govern? And is this a great opportunity for him or a great danger
sentiment? It's a great opportunity. I mean, if you look, there's been a whole series of pent-up legislation for the last 6 years that the president would never sign. So I think you're going to see a huge tax bill in the spring. I think you're going to see some kind of health care reform package that comes out at the same time. I think you'll see a dismantling a lot of the financial regulations Republicans have wanted to do for years. So I think for the next 6 months, I think you're going to see an unprecedented flow of legislation out of the Ryan-led House and the Senate and the Trump White House.
One follow-up, though. Trump's victory is based on a populist wave, right?
Mm-hmm.
The populist wave hates big banks. It hates some of this establishment ideology when it comes to financial. How will that jive with Trump's win to do things like that?
Well, so first of all, the tax cuts will help. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think people have been waiting for tax signals for a long time. Secondly, if you talk to small businesses, they're getting hammered. So the small business community will be very supportive. I mean, I'm on a bank board locally here, McFarland State Bank, you know, a classic sort of Wisconsin community bank. In the last 4 years, we've had to hire 3 full-time compliance people. It has nothing to do with whether the bank's making money or the bank's going to fail or whether it's safe. So I think if you can sell the package saying this isn't about Wall Street, it's about Main Street, it's a huge win for the Trump folks.
Does he build a wall, or how does he finesse the build a wall promise?
Well, it's a show over yet. I don't have a clue how you answer that. I think what he's got to do is do something that shows he's tough on illegal immigration. So they said during the campaign they would remove, I don't remember what the numbers were, the 500,000 people or whatever who are illegal aliens with criminal records. So I think you can do that, and you can, you know, crack down on amnesty cities and do some stuff that shows progress. I think he's going to have a tough time on some of the wall issues, because a lot of the opposition from the wall issues comes from Republicans in Texas who see it as sort of a crazy idea if you don't do it the right way. Okay. So one of the debates, I think, on this is whether Trump supporters saw his comments as figurative or literal. I think the national press always took them as literal. I think the Trump supporters, you know, if you can say, you know, we did this, the economy looks better, they push back on the trade deals. Canada and Mexico already said they're open to renegotiating some of the provisions in NAFTA. I think if he starts to tick down that list, people will be happy. It's a honeymoon. I mean, at some point, July, August, September, there's going to be a fight.
Does he use Vice President Pence as the Congress whisperer?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Pence will play a much more important role than vice presidents traditionally have, simply because Trump doesn't understand the process, and somebody's going to have the Rosetta Stone to explain to him how it's going to work. And I think Pence will be very much in it. Pence and Paul are very close, and he's close to the Senate leadership. So I think it'll be a pretty smooth running operation.
We've been talking about the demographics have been changing this country for a long time and how Republicans have an issue. Now, exit polls, which I have to admit I've taken with a grain of salt because they were so off in so many ways, but they showed that Trump did as well with Hispanics and African Americans as Romney did.
Did better.
That said, do you fear what could happen in the next 2 years, Republicans, if they don't address some of these issues in a better way? And two, are you prepared for the snapback of 2018 that we keep seeing? Because people seem to be angry. We've seen wave election. Now, I'm 43. My first wave election was 94 that I saw. And it was like a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Now I've had him in 06, 08, 10, 14, and 16.
Well, Stephen, I can take them all back to the Garfield administration. Sure. I mean, it's a natural thing. The party gets in power, the party overreaches. So, you saw that with Obama in 2008, followed by a disaster in 2010. I was in Congress when, you know, for the first time, this was 1994, Republicans controlled the House of Representatives. It was the first time since Harry Truman had been president. So I think Republicans have got to expect that 2 years from now it could be really tough. The caveat is, though, if the economy's doing better, and I think this was an economic election, if the economy's doing better, they maybe win behind their backs in the way that there was for Reagan in 84. I think 82 will be logically tough just because of the historic pattern. In the way that this time, I think the easiest way to explain the Hillary Clinton defeat is she was running for a third term. And third term administrations don't happen very often. Aside from Reagan to George Bush, and aside from Roosevelt to Harry Truman, which was, you know, the death in office, so it was, you know, was really an aberration. I mean, a Republican followed Clinton, a Democrat followed Bush, a Republican's now followed Obama, and I think that's the easiest way. At the end of the day, Hillary became the incumbent in a year where everybody wanted change. And the interesting thing was, you saw from the beginning of the year, anybody looked at it, the right track, wrong track was so upside down. I mean, it was 25% right track. 75% of the public thought the country was on the wrong track. So how are you going to keep going down the same line? It was a change election. She was the incumbent. That's what ended the night.
We've only got a couple of minutes more on national issues. Candidate Trump said he knows more than the generals on ISIS. Are you worried about how he conducts foreign affairs, Scott?
I think so. If you looked at the transition team, it was a lot of old Washington hands, which isn't a surprise. I mean, if you're going to hire somebody to run the Treasury Department. It would be nice if they actually had a team around them who'd been in the Treasury Department. I think the biggest challenge for Obama will not necessarily be on national security, but it's going to be on State Department issues. There was just, I don't remember the numbers, 50, 75, 100 former State Department, yes, Bush, Reagan folks who wrote a letter saying they could never work with Donald Trump. So they're going to have some challenges, I think, on the foreign policy front, just to staff the NSC and the State Department with folks who came out of Reagan-Bush. That's the one area I worry about. The rest of it, I think he'll have lots of opportunities to pick people who served in previous administrations, just as had Hillary won, it clearly was going to be substantially Clinton administration.
I've got one more question, then I'll give J.R. the last question. He's 70. Do you see him as going for a second term?
My God, he's only been in office for 3 days.
Oh, I know that. But, well, okay.
So he can run against Elizabeth Warren. They'll both be in their 70s, you know.
That's fair. J.R., last question.
Actually, a demographic question. Do you think Republicans still need to address the 2012 autopsy that Reince commissioned? Is that still an issue for your party, or do you think that this will sweep that away?
No, I think if you look at the demographics in the long run, clearly the Hispanic population in the United States is rising, and nothing's going to change. I think what caused Trump problems was the harshness of the rhetoric. You know, he actually outperformed Romney with Hispanics. And I think part of that is Hispanics who are here legally and have been here for generations, I think have a hard time identifying with some of the Hispanic activism. So they sort of said, hey, it's, you know, we're playing by the rules. A lot of what this guy's saying makes sense. And Hispanic voters, no more than any other demographic group, vote on different issues. I mean, nobody votes homogeneously. But I do think in the long run, if we're going to compete in the Southwest and some other places, clearly you have to have a friendlier tone. I think it was the tone that bothers people.
Okay, I want to turn the page. I want to turn to Wisconsin results. Scott, please stick around to offer any insights you want. The day after the election, Assembly Speaker Voss and Majority Leader Steinicke talked about the new voters that Mr. Trump brought into the Wisconsin election. Let's listen to less than 2 minutes of their comments, please.
I think most of that, as I went door to door over the course of the summer and the fall, was directed at Washington, D.C. In fact, many times when I would engage with voters on the doors, they didn't really want to talk about state issues. They were mostly focused on the presidential race and, to a lesser extent, a little bit on the U.S. Senate. So that, to me, sends a pretty strong signal that what people were looking for in this election was elected officials who were going to tell people what they're going to do and then actually work like crazy to get it done.
I think there's no question that President-elect Trump brought a whole group of new people into the process. I mean, as we went around the state knocking on doors, as you guys know, we knock on doors based off a voter list. And often as we're going down the streets talking to people, we'd come across houses that aren't on the voter list, mm-hmm. but yet they had a Trump and a Johnson sign in the front yard. And talking to them, these are people that haven't voted in years, if not decades. But they, Donald Trump was able to connect with them on a level that no other politician has been able to, at least in my lifetime, you know, maybe outside of Ronald Reagan.
Okay, now let's talk about Wisconsin results. Mm-hmm. Let's look at a map of which counties Trump carried and which counties Clinton carried. And I'm just interested, JR, in your impressions on this one.
In talking to people all week, especially Democrats, they've talked about this as the abject failure of their party to communicate with white, blue-collar voters across Wisconsin. If you look at where the party has done well, it remains Bain County and Milwaukee County.
Yeah.
The places where Obama did well, they're not doing well anymore. Look at the governor's race. Look at this map. You're seeing pockets of blue and a lot of red, especially the Fox Valley. They have lost the connection, the Eau Claire, north of Eau Claire, Chippewa Falls. They're not on issues that those voters care about. They're talking about things like, you know, I can understand the argument behind a bill to ban handguns in the state, but that bill does not work well in Chippewa Falls. And if you don't win assembly seats in Chippewa Falls, you don't have that bill on your agenda. And not to pick on that one, but that's an example of where they're talking about things that Democrats that aren't connecting, Republicans are. And they're doing a much better job. The Fox Valley should be a real worry for Democrats and a real boon for Republicans if they can keep that going forward, because the formula I've heard the last couple cycles has been to win statewide for Democrat, you have to do well in Dane County, do well in Milwaukee County, and just hold serve in the Fox Valley. You don't have to win it, but hold serve. And Obama did that both times. Hillary Clinton did not. She got wiped out, and that's the reason why she lost and why Ron Johnson won by 3 points. We keep talking about elections where 3 million voters turn out, the Democrats should do well. That's a big part of your problem is right there.
Okay, I want to come back to that map and use it again in a different way. I want to point out that in three rural counties that I picked, Juneau, Barron, and Forest counties, the Trump turnout was 60% higher than for Mitt Romney 4 years ago. And to counter that, the Democratic turnout fell in three urban counties, in Milwaukee County off 13%, in Kenosha and Racine counties 20%. So the Obama coalition, no excitement, drop off?
Yeah, well, there are three layers to like the vibe I've gotten from people this week about why she lost Wisconsin. The first layer is, if you have a choice between somebody that you consider to be boorish or sexist or racist, whatever word you want to attach to Donald Trump, if you have this person over here and a person that people think is a crook, you're more tolerant of this behavior than this behavior. So that's piece one of it. Piece two of it is, whether you liked his message or not, help make America great again inspired his base to turn out. What was Hillary Clinton's message? I'm not him. There's your drop-off in Milwaukee County. I'm not him is not enough to get people to come out the polls and be inspired to win. The third layer is, they did not come here. Hillary Clinton not stepped foot in Wisconsin this entire general election.
Since April, since she lost the primary.
Now, it may not have made a difference, but if Barack Obama or Michelle Obama had been in Milwaukee County, would there have been a better number probably for her? Possibly. If she had come here, could she have made a difference? Maybe not her, but you just send in Bill Clinton, just sending Bernie Sanders, just sending Chelsea, Tim Keene, that wasn't enough. And so in talking to Democrats who were close to her campaign, they were telling Brooklyn, hey, our numbers look good right now, but if Republicans come home and turn around and it's Mark, they're going to get dicey real quick. And Republicans came home and they missed their mark on turnout.
I was told 3 weeks ago it was a 3-point race here that is within the margin of error. So the Democrats had to see the same polling, or their polling was really bad. And I think they assumed. You know, it's interesting on election night, you kept saying, go between CNN and NBC. And they kept talking about Michigan and Wisconsin being reliably Democratic states. Well, they have been in presidential races, but that's sort of a strange argument to make when the governor of Michigan and the governor of Wisconsin are Republicans. When the Republicans run the legislature in Wisconsin, Republicans run the legislature in Michigan. So I think it's back to those assumptions. And I think at the end of the day, the numbers were a little out of whack because of the wow counties. They didn't come home to Trump. They did at the end, and those were people who clearly were going to vote. I mean, if you're in Elm Grove or West Bend, there's not going to be a drop-off in voter turnout. And some of them may have not voted for Trump at the margins, but that's what really kicked up Ron Johnson's turnout.
Do you agree with J.R., what he just said, that the Fox Valley, he used the term lost to Democrats? Is it? Has it?
Well, again, this is me trying to coach the enemy, but I think that continually to running candidates from Milwaukee and Madison has left them disaffected, and they've traditionally been candidates from the left side of the Democratic Party. So if I was advising the Democrats, which I would prefer not to do, I mean, I'd run somebody who's got a much different profile from Eau Claire or La Crosse or Appleton or someplace, because it's just a trap you fall into. And any major state hates its big city, right? So Wisconsin, you know, a lot of Wisconsin has their questions about Milwaukee. It's the same thing with Chicago and Illinois. It's the same thing with Detroit and Michigan. It's just the sort of dynamics of being the big city in the state. So
part of the attraction of Tom Nelson running for governor someday at one point was that he was a county executive in the Fox Valley. And
right.
He could get the turnout in Milwaukee and Dane counties, but also cut into the Republican advantage in the Fox. Now, he lost by 26 points or 27 points on Election Day. It's going to take him a while to rehabilitate his image. I don't think he's going to run for governor in 2 years because of that.
Well, similarly with Gallagher.
Yeah.
You know, that was always the same thought, that if Mike didn't win this congressional race, there was your Democratic governor in waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not bad. It was a blowout.
Yeah.
Let's look at the turnout numbers just for one more graphic. I'm really struck. Mr. Romney in 2012 got 1.4 million votes. Trump got 1.4 million votes. A lot of people who hadn't voted before, the disaffected, the angry middle class, Scott, that's where he got that 1.4?
Well, and the argument
which
was...
Which is Tom Romney's total?
Well, the argument was a few years ago that I talked to pollsters for Romney 2 or 3 days before the election, and they were convinced they were going to win because the argument was that Obama could not duplicate what he did in 2008. And Obama was able to do it at 12, although at much thinner margins. But that was a pretty close race in a number of states. But now it returned to sort of the norm, right? And so the turnout models actually were much closer to, I think, what Republican strategists expected in 12.
Okay, and then let's look at the Obama turnout, 1.62 million in 2012. Clinton, a drop off of 14.6%, 1.38. None of the Sanders, or very little of the Sanders people, came out for her. What do you think, Scott?
Well, I think it was the enthusiasm gap again. I think you saw those rallies for Trump, and you had people passionate about it. And I think, again, the Democrats made a mistake. They kept focusing on mechanics and didn't pay any attention to sort of what was driving people in the passion. If you look at the underlying polling questions about the economy in this huge anti-Washington wave, which seemed very reminiscent to me of Perot in 92 and the 94 Republican election. And again, back to your question, you've now seen these sort of wave elections. Again, I think the national press needed to spend a lot less time in bodegas in Manhattan and spend a lot more time walking around small towns and medium cities.
You were not surprised that Mr. Trump is the next president?
Honestly, I was surprised that he won. But I thought it would be extraordinarily close. And I had friends on the ground in Michigan who said, as Macomb County goes, the Reagan blue-collar Democrats of the 80s, so will go to the state of Michigan. And Trump ended up winning Macomb County. And I also thought a lot of the numbers in Wisconsin were depressed because of the wow counties around Milwaukee, and they were going to vote. Again, I suspect there to be some drop-off. But I thought if Trump won Florida, it'd be a nail-biter, and that's the way it turned out to be.
Yeah, one postmark. I mean, there are some Democrats who argue that voter ID was a problem that caused issues in Milwaukee County. There was a drop-off of 40-some thousand votes in Milwaukee County alone from Obama to Clinton, but that doesn't explain outstate and what happened. Just look at the raw numbers. There wasn't the enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton there was for Barack Obama. I mean, obviously there's a reason in Milwaukee that some people would have turned out for him, not for her. But look, statewide, there was a message problem that didn't inspire people.
Which Democrat could have beaten Donald Trump?
Well, I think it'd have to be somebody from the part. I mean, her challenge with the emails, coupled by her husband's ethical challenges when he was in office, I think created a cloud over her. Would Bernie Sanders have been able to do it? I'm not sure. I think Bernie Sanders was a classmate of mine in 1990, and I think if we had to write on a piece of paper and say which of our 49 classmates would be a successful presidential candidate, I'm sure Bernie Sanders would have been 49. I mean, he's not done anything in the Senate. So Bernie had this sort of same kind of anger that Trump had, but I don't think Bernie could have carried the day.
Well, it's obvious I'm trying to delay the opening of the predictions because, anyway, Joe Biden have won?
But here's the flip question is, could any other Republican have beaten Hillary? That's a very interesting question because he cut into the dynamic numbers we haven't seen in a long time. I don't think Romney could have. I mean, Romney is, for better or worse, a pretty buttoned-down, pretty stiff, sort of patrician candidate, and that did not sell in small town Wisconsin just as Hillary really didn't. So I'm not sure McCain could have. So where do you go back to? Now I think some of the governors who ran could have run. I think Kasich could have won. I think Scott could have won had he gotten through the primary. I think there's a lot of other folks who had the profile. But I think Trump was the right candidate for the right time.
Sifting and winnowing. You went from 17 to 1. Okay, reach for that envelope.
Okay.
Now, and open it, please. JR,
yes.
You were not a pundit. I went pundit, and I'm never going to do it again.
Holy God, how tightly did you seal this?
Explain your methodology.
So I played reporter. I surveyed 16 operatives, 8 Republicans, 8 Democrats, put their numbers in a spreadsheet and averaged them.
Okay.
And that's how I got my numbers to put down.
And I interviewed 210 candidates, and I'm about to be very wrong. And mine is the one without the name on it because I was greatly stressed. Ready? Here. Okay, give me mine.
Actually, neither of them have names on.
Oh, okay. is that yours, JR?
Yes.
Okay.
So first one.
Okay, teacher.
Percentage of votes for major party presidential candidates.
Chair, go first, please.
The average of my numbers from the 16 interviews were 49.9 Clinton, 44.7 Trump.
Okay, I said 49% Clinton, 47 Trump. I'm using a red pen to mark that one is wrong. Okay, teacher.
Percentage of House votes for the 8th U.S. House District. This is sort of the Green Bay, the Appleton region.
Yeah, it was the only open U.S. House.
Right.
I have to own up. I asked fewer questions about this one, but I had 54-45 for Gallagher.
And he got, that's coming next.
Yeah, he got 62.
All right. I said Gallagher 52 and Nelson 47. Another red pen. Okay, sir.
Okay, Wisconsin State Senate, how many Democrats and Republicans we'd have at the end of the campaign?
I had 17.9 Republicans and 15.1 Democrats because
how do you
of my
get
average.
A 0.9? Yes, come on. You got to round up, pick real people.
Okay, I also said 17-16, rounding up. So we both
So I had 18-15. If you round my numbers, at 18-15.
Yeah, at 18-15. You assumed that they'd lose.
It was interesting was the going thought was that they lose one from a macro level. But when you look at it from micro level, it was when I looked at it, Luther was the one that people thought would lose because it was closing against him. But that district is Republican enough that it didn't make a lot of sense that he'd lose unless he'd really screwed up. And at times, they thought he had. In the 18th district, that was the one that was all for the dogfight. But when people are talking about, you know, Republicans winning that one or Dems winning that one, it's like, well, take a step back. In 2012, Barack Obama won the state by 7 points. Romney won that district by 1,000, and Gudex won it by 600 votes. So looking at like Clinton's lack of enthusiasm, I couldn't figure out how the Dems would overcome that, because if a 7-point win didn't get him that seat, how would a 4-point win get him that seat? So I personally just didn't see how Dems would overcome that and win that seat.
You want my red pen to keep marking the wrong answers? teacher?
Wisconsin State Assembly.
Go first.
So man. I'll round up this time to 61 to 38. And again, on a macro level, everybody I talked to assumed that there would be losses. But when I looked at the races individually, I saw signs of maybe one loss, but that would be about it. Because in Mandy Wright's race with Pat Schneider in the 85th, you saw that race breaking against the Democrats, and they didn't come in until late. They ran this very bad ad that hit on Pat Schneider for arrest after leaving a strip club 13 years ago.
13 years ago.
One of the best ads people saw this cycle was Response,
from his
in
spouse,
which
right.
His wife said, "Shame on you, Mandy Wright. You don't need all you need to look, find a flawed candidate is look in a mirror." It was a very well done ad and really hit her. Looking in the southwestern corner of the state, yes, I could see how Ed Brooks and Todd Novak would lose, but it just didn't make a lot of. So I saw maybe they lose one of those. Nobody I talked to saw Chris Dano losing up in the 92nd. Scott Robin Voss, to his credit, moved about $25,000 there late, very quietly, did some digital and some mail, and picked him off because he saw the Trump wave happening, and that was going to be an issue for those guys.
Okay, I've got to do a mea culpa, and I was wrong. I picked 59 R's, 39 Dems. I thought Mandy Wright would win. I thought Mr. Novak would lose, and I just went, okay, voter turnout?
So this was more my guess. This one I'll take responsibility for. I thought it'd be 7. I didn't think it would exceed 12 or 8. I thought it would be about, you know, whatever. But, yeah, it was not good.
This is the only thing I got right. That doesn't make me a gold star pundit.
What did you guess?
I guess 66.
Did you?
I really did. I thought because there was so much anger at the two candidates. So I did. I hit that one.
And that one.
And then the tiebreaker?
Well, we have a tiebreaker, which really isn't necessary. But anyway.
I honestly went against my – what we talked about all this summer was that I was wondering, because Trump had the problem in the Wild County and because Clinton was not an inspirational candidate, what did we see, 2.6 million, 2.7? I've talked about this before. And I ignored the feedback I got in the summer and went with, oh, the Elections Commission says 3.1 million. We saw record turnout for early votes. That would make a lot of sense. Okay, I'll buy that. So I ignored my instincts on that one.
Okay. Tiebreaker.
Yeah, I was going to say, but I think what you see with early voting is people are just voting early. I don't think it necessarily indicates some surge. I voted early just because I didn't want to stand
25% or 26%.
It's a lot easier.
Yeah, it is. Okay, tiebreaker. How'd
so
you have it?
My numbers, my average from talking to people was Feingold 49.7, Johnson 48.6.
And I'm only going to say quietly because I was wrong. I had Feingold at 51, Johnson 47.
And that's,
I'm done with pundits. You were a reporter.
When did you make these predictions?
A week ago.
Okay.
One week ago.
One thing that I've wondered is, I don't know if we'll know this for sure, is the Comey letter that reopened things, then closing it back down on Sunday. What did that do? Because if you go back and look, before that letter came out, Hillary Clinton was talking about competing in Arizona. She went there. They're putting money into Missouri to help a Senate candidate there. Did that change the dynamic and halt whatever? The late breakers, we saw exit polling we saw, late breakers went for Trump. Did that factor into them saying, you know what, just enough?
So I was talking when we first started about the stuff I just did for the State Department. A buddy of mine was along who's a former Democratic member from Idaho. And Larry said, and this would have been in mid-October, that at that point, 15% of the voters were still undecided. And if you looked 4 years earlier, at that point, 5% of the voters were undecided. And he said, she's running like the incumbent. At the end, votes always break against the incumbent. It's the quantity, quality, you know. So it was interesting because I think some people saw that trend coming.
There was one national, and if I knew who said it, I'd attribute it to him, but I forgot. 58% of late breakers in Wisconsin broke for Trump.
Yeah. And I actually, if I would have been on this, you know, sort of the pick, I think that I'm not an expert on state races. I would have bet that Hillary would win just because of the history of the state, although I thought it'd be remarkably close. The Gallagher race really hadn't been close for a month. And I thought that Johnson would win because I think he closed fast, and I think Feingold ran a very soft race the last 3 weeks.
Johnson closed exceedingly well. Okay, yeah. Now, stock picks. JR.
So, Reince Priebus, I mean,
Rising.
Give the guy credit. A couple of years back, he said, we have to win the White House as Republicans, or we're in the wilderness for a long time. And even though this race violated every rule that he had from that autopsy about what we have to do to win, he's in a position now that he can say he rebuilt the Republican National Committee, he broke records fundraising-wise, and he won the White House. That's kind of hard to argue against that guy having a good night on Tuesday.
I probably had literally a dozen people asked me over the last 10 days, well, what will Reince do because he can't run for another term at the RNC if he loses two White House elections in a row. So he had a really good night.
Next chief of staff?
I don't see that. Okay. I think you need somebody who's got a harder edge to them than Reince does. I mean, I think to be a White House chief of staff, you got to pound tables. I mean, he may be nice on the outside. I don't think that's Reince's style. I think it's more like a Christie or a Giuliani, just because I think more of the personality. I think Reince can have just about any slot he wants, but I don't think that's a good fit for him.
How damaged is Christie in the wake of the convictions from Bridgegate?
If they make him White House chief of staff, he doesn't go through the confirmation process, and if the Democrats don't like it, tough.
Okay. Mixed.
So, Tammy Baldwin, so no Democrat really, you know, felt good about what happened Tuesday, but senators like Tammy Baldwin may have had a good night in a weird way, because if, like we talked about, the inevitable snapback election in 18, it may not save her, but it may give her a better environment to run in than what she would have had. Now, if you had a President Clinton who won by half a point or a point because she had flipped, you know, that 100,000 votes between Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and she had done that, she'd been very unpopular, would have had a Republican Congress to work with, been a bad 2 years, and it would have been a toxic environment for Democrats. Now, there is at least hope for Democrats that Republicans will overreach and screw up, or people will go, because they've been mad, and again, 6, 8, 10, 14, and 16, that they'll go, this wasn't what I asked for, these guys, because now Republicans own everything. You know, you own it, you break it, you fix it. So if they screw up, there's an opportunity for her now. The flip side is Republicans used the Thoma VA scandal against Russ Feingold a little bit in this campaign. That is nothing like what she will see ad-wise from Republicans hitting her about Thoma VA. It is going to be brutal and ugly, but this gives her a better, possibly a better environment run in than she could have had.
Yeah, so the view from 20,000 feet for folks who aren't paying attention is this time out Republicans had a far disproportionate number of seats up, so it was essentially 2-1. The flip in 2 years is it's 2-1 Republicans for Democrats. So. I think for the Democrats who had a good night, arguably it was those senators who were going to be up for election in 18.
And falling.
Falling, I mean, they just missed. And the question is kind of why. And now what's interesting, if you want to dive in, Charles Franklin from Marquette, it's the gold standard of polling in Wisconsin. And he urged people, that last polling presentation, look at more than one poll. Polls can be wrong. And some people took that as like an indicator of we just don't know anymore what's happening. Now, we talked to Charles this week. They're going to do a deep dive of what they missed. How do they fix things? Was there that quiet Trump segment that was going to say, I support this guy? Interesting thing, in the last Marquette poll, he actually got Hillary Clinton's number right. He missed Trump's. And that really was a big deal and in the end.
Is polling broke?
Yes, but let me go back to your point, back to my argument earlier that she ran as an incumbent. When you do polling for folks, usually the number you see for an incumbent is what they get on election day, because undecided voters usually break against the incumbent. So if you look nationally and sort of average all the polls, they're pretty close to where Hillary was. What they missed was the Trump vote. I think there's a serious issue in polling worldwide. So they missed the Brexit vote because of the quiet Tory, as it was called in that case, when the UK decided to leave the European Union. They missed it in the Colombian peace vote. They missed it in the Scottish independence vote. I mean, it's sort of everywhere. Part of it, I think, is just the mechanics. Finding the number of people with landlines is harder than it ever was before. The response rate for people who would answer questions to polling has fallen from the high 30s down to 11%. So you have to ask yourself, who's still left answering there? And the cost, for example, today to do a good poll when I was in office, now again, this is way back 20 years ago, it was $10,000. A good poll now will cost you $100,000 or more.
Were there a number of people who, when contacted and asked if they were going to vote for Donald Trump, lied?
Or refused to answer.
Or refused to answer.
Because, back to the national narrative was, it was all these sort of country bumpkins, and, you know, they didn't understand what a great job was being done out of Washington and New York, and I think it was an anti-establishment vote. And the other big loser I put in there is the press corps. I mean, I think, I'm not a left-wing media conspiracy guy, but I have to tell you, I thought the Post and the New York Times were out of their heads. I mean, when you looked at the front page of the Times and the Washington Post, they would have 8 opinion pieces lined up above the fold on the pages, and they were all anti-Trump pieces. And I think folks got fed up with that.
And at a lower, you know, at the kind of lower level terms of the ballot, I mean, I was talking to people who were running assembly races telling me that Republicans are getting back numbers that had their incumbents up by double, and they didn't believe them. Because how could that be possible with the Trump suffering? Because the Trump factor wasn't showing up early on in their polling. Likewise, Democrats, and now, you make assumptions, and some pollsters make assumptions in terms of turnout, what it's going to look like. The Democrats, the seats they played in, they played there because their polling told them to play there. They made mistakes in the end, but you can see where they felt like, okay, Julie Lassa should be fine. You know, her numbers looked good early on. They missed that. Jennifer Schilling, who is now up by 58 votes last time I checked.
In the potential recount in the 32nd district.
In a district that normally is like plus 10 for Dems, even in a bad year, she's barely holding on. Now, not to be too geeky on you with like recounts, but because we vote with optical scanners anymore, unless you find a mistake in the canvas, like all you do is run the ballots back through the optical the machine and you get the same number most of the time. Lesser found ballots, spoiled ballots, provisionals that make a difference, that's will probably hold up. But that said, you just saw the failure, not just at national level, but local levels. You saw the numbers were off for these guys. And again, Republicans were almost like, we should have believed our polling more than we did. We were nervous that more than we should have been.
Right. Okay. We're in overtime here, so we got to close it out. Well, JR, next week we'll be able to talk about the new leaders in the ledge on the next Rewind. And
maybe not in the Senate Democratic Caucus.
Okay. We will hold that thought. Scott, thanks so much. Scott Klug, thanks
so
much for
joining
us.
Always glad to come here and embarrass both of you.
Yeah, you did, and I'm not going to pundit again. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for November 11th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.